Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 148th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Nawara Al-Abaidi, originally from Baghdad, Iraq. Raised in a close-knit family, eldest of four children, Nawara became an electrical engineer like his father after years of rigorous study. He applied his skills to help the U.S. Army and the U.S. Air Force to build power plants, diesel engines, and generators, and this caused him to be targeted for 6 years before he left Iraq and moved to Maine in 2014 with his wife and three children. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Nawara.
Hi, Kate. How are you? Good morning, everyone. Just small adjusting on the year I arrived in 2012.
Oh, thank you.
September 2012.
Yes, that makes more sense that you've had even more time to assimilate and acclimate. Nawara, you described for me how your family in Iraq would come together every Friday. And I wondered if you could tell us more about that, what it looked like and what your weekly ritual was all about.
That's a ritual. It was from my grandfather, from my mom's side. This is the lovely event that we do, like every Friday. We gather all the family with my cousins, my aunts, uncles, starting like between 10 to 11 a.m., up to 9 p.m. We're doing lunch.
What's for lunch?
Well, different kinds, like, you know, Iraqis. My favorite lunch, like our food, it's a biryani, we call it. This is my favorite food.
The rice and vegetables mixed together?
That's right, with the chicken on it.
Oh, yeah.
And we keep, like, waiting for that day because my grandma, God rest her soul in peace, she passed away a few years ago. Her delicious food, and all together with my moms and my sisters-in-law, they are there. So,
how many would that be, just when your immediate relatives got together for family
dinner?
It
would be like around up to 25 or 30 person will be at the same house at the same day.
Your grandmother's a legend.
Yeah.
Cooking for everybody.
And we keep continuing that because the oldest on the family, we will gather on his house. Now here in the United States, we keep doing that every Saturday. My sisters and my cousins, they are gathering all together like in my house because I'm the oldest in the family.
Oh, nice. You get the privilege
and
the responsibility.
Yeah, just they transferred to me to the United States.
How many relatives do you have here in Portland?
I have my sibling, three, like my brother, Haider, and my sisters, Noor and Neba. I have my cousin, Mohammed, and I have now my closest and my oldest friend, Allah. He just arrived like 10 days ago.
That's exciting. It probably feels like family, too.
Yeah.
So you used to gather on Fridays because that was Holy Day. What's that like, everybody working Fridays here? Does that seem out of step when you arrive?
It is different, yeah. It is different. Back in Iraq, we have the Friday is the holy day, so nobody work on Friday because it is the prayer day we have in Islam, the praying day to go to the mosque, and there's a lot of people that go for this special pray on Friday.
And I know there's still Friday prayer at mosques, but people tend to go after work. Is that right? Now, here in the U.S.?
Yes, they are going, yeah.
I think that probably most people don't realize that's your holy day.
That's right.
Would you tell us more about your career and how you got involved with the U.S. military when you were in Baghdad?
I started to work with a Caterpillar dealer in Baghdad called the Eratrack branch since 2005, September 2005, and involved with the application team. The first question it was with my the manager. He asked me, "Are you willing to work with the U.S. side, because we are providing, like, and supplying generators and power plants. And I say, yes, because that's what I like to work on. So it doesn't matter. And at that time, it wasn't, like, that much dangerous in 2005. But after that, it became more complicated, and we start to be targeted. So that's how we involved, going to from project to another one, and we been as a subcontracts with a lot of companies, American companies.
As the pressure evolved and the situation got worse, what did that look like, being targeted?
When you start to work with any parts of, or like working with the U.S. side, you're going to be targeted by some terrorists. Not targeted by everyone, but some terrorists. They don't like the U.S. side or the U.S. government. So I felt it like it's kind of just like to make the situation hard. It's not about like special belief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you were followed? Is that how you knew you were being watched?
I've been followed several times when I left the bases or the project sites by terrorists. They tried to stop us like at that time, but thank God we just survived. And
absolutely.
I got like there is a lot of I've been shooted by the terrorists also when I delivered back the car, which is I used for the company. It has like a few holes on it because the bullets on it.
You must be thankful every day you make it home in a situation like that.
I am. Every time I'm going out, everyone keep like in tension. When we hear an explosion happen back, I start to get like calls from my mom, my dad, my wife, and are you okay? Are you okay? Because they know I'm traveling around. And the problem there when you call someone is not answering, this is the fear. So you don't know what's going to happen.
Do you know other people that worked as engineers that were killed for their work with the U.S. government?
We have a lot of friends. They've been killed. They were working with us at Caterpillar. We have drivers. They've been killed. And we have and engineers. They've been kidnapped. We've been in very, like, tough situation.
Putting the terror in terrorism. Yeah. This meant that you basically became an enemy of the state in a way, did it? Or just of the terrorist group?
Of the terrorist, to be specific, and not the state, because like the state's mean like our family, our homeland, but it's not the terrorist who came from somewhere. Nobody know who are they, who they are, or where they came from, but just they show up and they start to mess out the country.
Sure, everything was in disarray.
Yeah.
Was there anybody that was particularly helpful to you in getting out of the country?
There's a lot of people they help, but to be specific and to be thankful for one of the biggest support that I got, I know her in 2008 from one of the projects in south of Iraq, Anne Rees. She is the biggest support I got, and she helped me a lot. She taught me a lot, and she even wrote the letter that I have it, and she prepared every single document for us to travel to United States.
She was a Mainer that you met in Iraq?
Yes.
Through Caterpillar?
Through Caterpillar. She was working with KBR. She was the deputy manager. She is a civil engineer. And the first met for her, like when she introduced me to the crew and the land where we are starting, where we going to build the project. That was in 2008. And we started the project in the end of 2008 and beginning of 2009. And we became like more involved together in every single steps through the project. And she keep asking about me when she left Iraq and I stayed there every day, calling, texting and checking about us. And when I arrived to United States also, she never forgot any person or a member in the family for his birthday or her birthday, and she visit us, she support us, and whenever I have any question or advice, I just call her.
That's remarkable. I wish everyone who came had a friend like that.
I wish they haven't, but I'm lucky.
Yes, you are. Lucky. Yeah, you kind of do similar work now where you're the outreach connection for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you weren't being an engineer in Iraq or working to get out, you were following a lot of other passions of yours. I know that you are a photographer, but that is superseded by your love of cars. Yes. Tell us about cars and you and how you got involved in the work you do with cars.
Since I was like a kid, I love cars. And my hero, my uncle, God bless him. He is also car lover. And we've been always together, like about cars, about music. And from this point, like I start to get involved with the photographer for the cars and that. And we are founder, me and two of my friends, Hussein and Marwan. We found Baghdad Auto Club back in Baghdad. We start to prepare for events, racing, car show. And even when I came to here, I keep like managing partially managing the Facebook page for our club. Me and my brother, Haider, we modify cars here in the United States. Like, we bought the cars, modify it, and we drove it. And, you know, when you see, like, a very nice car, they offer, like, to buy it. And we buy and sell cars, like, after we modify it. But my love, my Mustang, it's not for sale.
You do the Iraqi pimp my ride.
Yeah.
Tell us about your Mustang. For listeners who are also listening to the show before that, they may have heard you drive in. Tell us what you're driving.
I'm driving the 2000 Mustang GT. I modified this car and I spent a lot of time on it. The special things about it, like from outside, it has a Lambo door. And you can hear it from far. Like, before I came in, maybe 10 minutes, you can hear me.
Here comes Noir. It's beautiful. Thank you. People who follow this show on the website, I will put the picture of Noir with his car up on today. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Noir Al-Abadi. In Iraq, he was an electrical engineer. Here in Portland, he's employed as a case manager supervisor for Catholic Charities of Maine. Noir, you have excellent English skills, and you're highly adaptable as a person, so you have been able to find meaningful work in this community. But I'm curious about what keeps you from being able to continue your professional career, in this case, engineering, in the United States.
I would love, as you said, like excellent skills of English. I would love to get it like excellent. Still working on it, every day learning a new thing. Yeah, I'm working with the Catholic Charities. I start to volunteer and then I start officially working with the Catholic Charities as a case aide and transportation aide in 2014. And from there, I applied for a case management. And then I became a supervisor of case managers. And this year I got the new position for employment case management supervisor. I like my work. I like to help the people. But still, I love my field. I would love, and I'm still dreaming to get back to my field to build power plants and working on generators. That's the thing which we looking, like me and my friends, we have a lot of engineer here. They all dream to go back to their field, but it's still hard, especially for the northern area, for limitation of opening these kind of jobs, and a lot of qualifications. You have to have like more to graduate from here to get like the FE, the fundamental engineering exam. And we still didn't find out the right path to go back to our field, to act as an engineer in the United States.
This is true for so many professions. When you come in, there are hurdles that need to be met.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think we could do differently as a receiving culture to benefit more from the skills that people bring with them as immigrants? How could we make this easier to recognize the substantial work that you've done already and not to duplicate? Because, you know, your work's already been good enough for the U.S. military, and we know you're a highly skilled, highly educated engineer. What could we do to make the pathway straighter?
Try us. This is the easiest way. And I know everything is here like black or white, but I'm holding like a lot of certificates and recommendations from U.S. military or Air Force or U.S. companies that I've been working with Caterpillar, and I have my recommendation or certificate from Caterpillar itself. I showed that, and I have my bachelor degree equivalent, but still it's not kind of not recognized here. When I went south because of the like a lot of opening
in southern United States,
yes, a lot of opening, so it's easy to go back to your field. But I chose to stay here in Maine because I love Maine.
Oh, what makes you love it here?
The community. These nice people, welcoming people, that's what I like, and that's what we are missing. And it's a good place to raise your kids.
Well, I agree, but I'm glad we got you.
Yeah.
As a leader at Catholic Charities of Maine, you sometimes run one of their traveling training programs called In Their Shoes. Wondered if you could tell us about that offering and who takes this class and how people would find out about that if they're interested in more.
That training to show the people, to introduce the people to the refugees and what stage and what difficulties they are facing when they left their countries. And we show them like exactly what is happening, because we are acting as the CBPs or the smugglers or the transportation people, like, and wearing like them, and we show them what is the difficulties they are facing.
So you're showing maybe potential employers or potential host communities. Who are you speaking to about these situations?
It's still variable, like who's asking us. We went to universities, schools, high schools, middle school. We went to organizations. We went to a group of community. It's everywhere.
All over Maine?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And if people are interested in that program, how would they learn more?
They're just contacting the Catholic Charities.
ccmaine.org.
ccmaine.org.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what are some of the things that you like to highlight during this training? We were talking earlier, and you said there are two things that you want to make sure people know.
I would like to highlight the thing. They always asking me when I go to these training or panels, they ask me how we can help the refugees. If you ask me to do thing, what do you ask me to do? Actually, that's the only thing I wanted for me and for all my family. Smile. This is the language of the world. And when I saw this smile on their faces or the people here, that means you are welcoming me, welcoming my family. You're feeling happy that I'm here in a safe place.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful. Parnav Ashrahani said the same just recently, and I thought that was funny that you brought up smiling. It's free.
Yeah.
And pretty easy to muster and communicate something really powerful. You're welcome.
And also smile, it's a therapy.
Yeah, it feels good for me too when I smile, right? And so what's the other thing you want people to know?
I want them to know that don't generalize. There is everywhere around the world. There is a good people and bad people. So if you hear there is someone from specific community did something wrong, that doesn't mean all the community is a bad community or bad people. So when you hear there is like someone did frauds, whatever, bad things, which is we don't accept also as a religion, as a culture, as a country, doesn't mean like all this community is a bad people or they do these wrong things. So there is a good people and there's a bad people everywhere.
That's so true. That's so true. If you were to just watch movies about the United States,
exactly,
you'd probably think cars blew up every other minute.
Exactly. Yeah, I mentioned that everywhere. When before I came to the United States, I was following movies or watching movies, and I saw like a bumping car everywhere, drug dealer, and like gangs. So all the images built about the United States, it's like that. But when I met a friend from the United States, which is starting from David Hooper and Andres and etc., they are amazing people. There is a lot of nice people. Ms. V, Aaron, there's a big list of names. They are amazing people.
So it's a good thing you didn't generalize Americans based on movies.
Oh, no.
And I, of course, hope that people will not generalize on any population.
Yeah.
So this past spring, you graduated from a master's degree program in project management from Southern New Hampshire University.
Yeah.
What do you hope to do with that degree in time?
I'm trying to put in all my skills for my classes to put it on my business. I just got a new business on Forest Avenue. It's a grocery shop.
Like Friday night.
Yeah, Friday night, exactly. Brand new.
Congratulations on your new business.
Thank you very much. And my idea from the beginning before I took these classes, it was a shortcut for me to go back to my field. Because if I got this degree, I can be as a project manager. I was thinking about the engineering project. And you can show your other skills as an engineer, so you can do both in the same place. As a shortcut, I did it.
Yeah, so you have a lot of irons in the fire now.
Yes.
You have your employment case management supervision.
Mm-hmm.
You have a new grocery store.
Yes. It's a family grocery store. All my family, they are working with me and supporting me all the time.
So at 630 Forest Avenue.
Yes.
It's a halal market.
Yes. And we have a part of also as a restaurant. We're going to we have big changes for future.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
And then and possibly some project management. And
project management involved everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at all, exactly, right? All kinds of projects.
Yeah.
Including your family project. Your children are now 12, 10, and 7. What are your hopes for them, for their futures here in Maine?
My hopes for them to grow up in a safe place, feeling well, and I want them to be better than me. That's my hope and that's my willing to them. And I'm trying to work every second with them. I know their mom more with them because I'm working outside. She has the highest percentage to manage them.
Yes, she has a lot of influence.
Yes.
She's with them a lot.
Yes, she is a full-time mom.
What are her hopes like for the coming 5 years? What would she like to do in time?
She is attending a school now, the adult education, practicing on her English. And she is happy now that we got that business. And so she can show her skills on cooking.
Oh, great. I can't wait to come in to 630 Forest Avenue and try out some of her cooking. What would you recommend?
I would recommend we have sandwiches. We call it shawarma sandwiches. We have falafel. And she is a specialist on that, what I told you, the biryani. And there's a food we have it called maqluba. That means it's upside down.
Oh.
Yeah.
Great.
She is very talented on cooking.
Well, Noir, you are a bright man with many varied interests. You have already applied your talents to benefit our country and community directly, and I know you will continue to do so. Thank you so much for risking so much to serve, and I wish you all the best as you navigate your way back to your career in time.
Thank you very much, and I would like to thank the United States as a to welcoming me and help me and support all my family.
I think this could be a win-win. We're pretty lucky you're here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmannersspeak.com and check out more related information at facebook.com/newmannersspeak. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song Noir has selected for us. Noir, would you introduce this song as we wrap up today?
I like this song. It's Hotel of California from Eagles. And this is my favorite song, me and my uncle. God bless him. And I would like everyone to listen to this music. It's the central music.
Is this your car uncle?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Hotel California.
feast. Stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't kill the beast. Last thing I remember, I was running for the door. Had to find a passage back to the place I was before. Relax, that the nightmare we are programmed to receive. You can check out any time you like, but you can't.